This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome on into White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller. It is March 15th. The Ides of March.
Beware the Ides of March.
No.
No, we will not be aware of the Ides of March, Lisa Simpson, as Homer said. This is White Sox Weekly, March 15th. We are 12 days away from opening day. It is getting so close. I'm getting so excited to have White Sox baseball, meaningful regular season White Sox baseball. Of course, we've got the spring training edition, and your next broadcast can be caught right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. That will be taking place later on today as the White Sox take on the Rockies. First pitch coming your way at 3:05. So Len and DJ will get your share, your fill of White Sox baseball. But again, opening day, it is right around the corner. We are 12 days away. White Sox baseball is back. Join us at Rate Field for opening day on March 27th as we take on the Los Angeles Angels at 3:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans in attendance will receive a 125-year anniversary plush blanket presented by BMO. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. So very exciting. We are getting there, very close to having White Sox baseball back in your life on a daily basis on the home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. All right, so getting you up to date on what you need to know, some of the biggest stuff that came down this week. Colson Montgomery, of course, the man who a lot of people believed was earmarked to be the starting shortstop for the White Sox, was sent back down to AAA. No doubt the back spasms that he was dealing with and put him on ice for about 10 days or so probably played a huge role in Colson Montgomery not breaking camp with the team for opening day. Now, he will be playing in tomorrow, Sunday's spring breakout game against the Rockies, which we're going to cover extensively here shortly on White Sox Weekly when Jim Callis joins me, Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline and the Major League Baseball Network. We'll get into all that, but Colson Montgomery will not be on the Major League roster. And when you break it down and think about it, ultimately, because he did have an interrupted spring because of the injury, I think this is probably the best move for the organization for the long term. If you look at highly touted prospects, they comes to Jackson Holliday comes to mind from last year. He had the opportunity to break camp with the Orioles, and he was overwhelmed immediately and had to be sent back down to the minors. And I'm not saying that Colson Montgomery would be overwhelmed in any way, but he is not set up to have success from the outset. And I think the last thing the White Sox want to do is to have Colson Montgomery break camp, struggle, because he didn't get enough at-bats during spring training, be forced to go back down, and then have to come back up and, you know, have that whole interrupted. The plan, the hope, is that when Colson Montgomery arrives and he's your everyday shortstop, he doesn't have to go back to the minor leagues. So, again, I think the back spasms played a huge role in interrupting his spring and his plans for opening day, but he was optioned to AAA earlier this week. Montgomery, when he was asked about being optioned, he said, quote, "They pretty much told me, keep doing what I'm doing. It's a matter of time, pretty much. I'm not really stressing about it." So keeping a positive attitude, and I have no doubt that once he is hitting in AAA, he will be back up in the majors before you know it, before the blink of an eye. So Colson Montgomery, option to AAA, will not be the White Sox starting shortstop, like I think a lot of White Sox fans initially thought when the winter began. Some good news, Drew Thorpe, one of the key pieces in the Dylan Cease trade last year. We saw him on the South Side make his Major League Baseball debut, had some success at times, dealt with an elbow injury at the end of the year. He is finally back. He had a 21-pitch live batting practice earlier this week, and Drew Thorpe afterwards said, quote, "Yeah, everything was good. A little sore today, obviously. I haven't played catch yet, but seems like bouncing back pretty well." When he said today, that was actually Thursday. More from Thorpe. "It's been a while since I've seen a hitter in a box. It was obvious. I was obviously pretty excited. I think I was out there 30 minutes earlier than I should have been. It was good overall." So there's some encouraging news from Drew Thorpe, the biggest pieces of news over the last week in White Sox camp. Now, some other White Sox stuff that you're going to want to hear, because they were the focus of foul territory. And I think White Sox fans, if you're watching baseball closely, at this point you're probably fairly familiar with foul territory. A.J. Pierzynski, the star of the show, along with Scott Braun and Eric Katz, well, they were at White Sox camp earlier this week. Had a lot of great interviews and some sound I'd like to share with you here on White Sox Weekly here. So we'll jump right into it. And I thought this was a poignant question from AJ directly to Will Venable.
Where do you start? I mean that in, you know, 121 losses last year. Where do you start? Like, what's the number one thing that you want to see from day one of camp to day opening day to the end of game 162 for you guys?
Well, certainly going out there and competing and playing hard every day. But for us starting, it's about, you know, creating an environment where these guys are happy to come to every day, and that we have a positive environment, that we're supporting our guys to be at our best. And that also that we're focusing on the things that we know make a difference in winning baseball. And that's kind of a process where we're highlighting those things, we're presenting them to players, and then we're going out on, and training it, and then ultimately holding them accountable to those things as well.
Like hearing that message from brand-new White Sox manager Will Venable, a clear, articulate way what he expects from the team and how they're going to hold the team accountable moving forward. More from Will Venable on foul territory. He was asked about giving the guys a couple of names that have kind of looked good in spring training so far.
Starts with Miguel Vargas. You know, he's going to be a really important piece for us. You know, you'll see him a lot at third base, maybe some first base. But, you know, a young guy that, you know, has broken through the league, but really hasn't had that opportunity to establish himself yet. And we really believe in him and his abilities, and just, you know, going to give him a runway. So he's somebody to watch for sure. Chase Mydroth is another guy we got in the Crochet trade, you know, that, you know, we'll see how it shakes up as far as opening day stuff. But he's somebody that we know is going to help at some point and is a really dynamic player, you know, really, really good at bats, a really good approach, and just a fun guy to watch play baseball.
Will Venable name checking Chase Mydroth and Miguel Vargas there. Mydroth, you wonder, could he be a potential option at shortstop? There's a plethora of options on the White Sox roster. We're going to have to watch over the next week to see who Will Venable likes to see out there at shortstop. Certainly, Mydroth could be somebody. Brooks Baldwin could be an option. Of course, Josh Rojas has had experience there. So a lot of Lenin Sosa, possibly. So a lot of options for the White Sox to take a look at without Colson Montgomery there. Now, I found it interesting that the first name that Will Venable mentioned was Miguel Vargas there. And then later on the episode of Foul Territory at White Sox camp, one of the first names that Andrew Vaughn brought up.
Vargas. Vargas has been swinging it. Looks really good at the plate right now. Excited to see what he does.
He made some changes, right? Did he change his stance or something?
Changed his stance a little bit. Looked like, you know, put on some weight, got some pop. BP's been impressive. You know, in-game it's translating, so it's always good signs.
So I find that interesting because it's not just Will Venable. It's Andrew Vaughn. Everybody seems to be noticing Miguel Vargas, and he was the headliner at the trade deadline last year when the White Sox dealt Eric Fetty and Michael Kopech at the trade deadline. Miguel Vargas was a once highly thought of prospect in Major League Baseball. You know, he was a top 10 prospect in the Dodgers organization. They really didn't have the at-bats for him to, at the Major League level, get the everyday, day-in, day-out at bats that they would have liked, and it seemed like he plateaued a little bit at his during his time in LA, because of course they're just loaded with all-star players at every position, and if they don't have one, they will quickly add one via free agency. And it seemed like Miguel Vargas, for whatever reason, got somewhat off track. And then last year, when he was traded to the White Sox, clearly things went completely off the rails. And, you know, he admitted that he, you know, lost some strength, lost some weight throughout the season. He made that a huge change, changed his diet this offseason, tried to become stronger. And we're seeing the improvements at camp, as Will Venable and Andrew Vaughn attest there. Now, Andrew Vaughn also talked to A.J. Pierzynski specifically about what happened when the White Sox acquired his former college teammate, Corey Lee.
What about Corey Lee? Corey Lee is your college teammate. Did you tell the White Sox to trade for him?
I did not. I didn't even know it was going to happen. We were actually roommates in college, too.
Oh, are you roommates now?
No.
Does he take the dog out for you?
No, he's got his own dog. I got my own dog. That's too much. You know, it was crazy. I got a phone call. He calls me, and we hadn't talked in probably a couple months. The season was going on. And he's like, hey, I'll see you tomorrow. I said, what? He said, I just got traded to you guys. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. That's kind of cool. So that year he actually did live with me for the month, so he didn't have to find a place to stay. But I thought that was pretty sweet.
I found that amusing. And then sure enough, foul territory caught up with Corey Lee later on at camp that day. And then A.J. Pierzynski told Corey Lee what Andrew Vaughn had said. And sure enough, this should come as no surprise because A.J. asked Corey Lee about being Andrew Vaughn's roommate.
Who was a better roommate, you or Andrew Vaughn?
Vaughn was the clean one. He was the one to hold us accountable, to kind of keep us calm a little bit. But he was outstanding from freshman year, sophomore year. I moved out junior year, got a little bit better of a spot. But sophomore year, we were kind of in the slums in a nice Berkeley apartment. So that was fun.
All right. So he told us, we're going to run this interview later. We talked to him earlier. He said that when you got traded, you had to tell him. He didn't know. So are you mad at him for not paying attention to what's happening and having to call him? And he said you called him and said, oh, we're going to be teammates. And he was like, wait, what? What are you talking about?
I think he had a little bit of news before, and I don't think he could share it with me. I think they kind of did their research on me, obviously, coming over as a catcher. I think you need to do a little bit more homework on that. So I think they talked to him, and then, yeah, he was the first call. As soon as I got drafted, I said, hey, man, we got to be teammates again. And can't ask for a better teammate and a better person. And just kind of made me feel at home.
He's the vet, too.
Yeah, exactly.
He's the vet.
He's the guy. Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's the guy that you look up to.
Exactly.
Now, right? He was your roommate.
Yep.
He was cleaning up your stuff. And now you got to look up to him
exactly.
And respect him.
Yep. I obviously got to give him some credit. He's done a fantastic job ever since he's debuted. And he's had success that others can't even have in a couple years. So he's a smart guy to bounce ideas off of. He's a smart guy just to hang out with. And he's a really, really good person to have in our clubhouse.
One more piece of sound from Corey Lee via Foul Territory earlier this week. I thought this was interesting because we hear about PitchCom as fans of the game, but you don't really get an inside look or a lot of details about what's going on. A.J. Pierzynski, a former catcher who really didn't have the ability to use PitchCom when he was playing, asked Corey Lee about PitchCom.
We have a lot of catching depth. We have a lot of catching coaches. We're hammering the receiving right now. We're hammering the throwing, hammering the communication, and it's all the right things.
Are your fingers in a good place?
Oh, yeah. All the pitch comms.
Yeah.
I'm getting a handle of it. We changed it up a little bit this year, and I think it's good for the game. It makes it a little bit easier. No one's stealing signs now. I don't got to worry about that. So we got a lot of good things going on in the catching.
Yeah, you mean you don't sit back there and go, man, what? We just changed the signs. What are they again?
Yeah, exactly.
Then you have to call timeout because you forget what you called.
I'm playing a video game now on my knee, so it's a good time.
Have you ever noticed that anyone, you could see what button they press? Have you ever tried to figure it out?
I've tried to. Whenever I'm on the bench or whatever, I try to sneak in there. I try to pick the catcher all the time. I know what he's trying to do because I've done the same thing, but that's kind of my job whenever I'm not playing is to pick the catcher, pick the pitcher, pick the defense. All the defense has pitch comms in their ear. So if a slider's coming, they're all probably going to shift the other side because of the pull side. So you could see that. And just using the game to your advantage now. And I think it's going deeper now and starting to see trends on the pitch comm stuff. So it's
smart.
Just, you're just trying to
Cal education right
don't
there.
Don't give me that much credit. But just trying to learn, just trying to be a sponge of this game.
Couple of Cal Bears there, Bears. The Corey Lee and Andrew Vaughn, former college roommates at Cal when they played there. I thought that was some good stuff there. Got a lot of interesting insights courtesy of Foul Territory. Thanks to them for the use of that sound. A.J. Pierzynski obviously has a good working relationship with a lot of players in the game, and so he does, you know, get, I think, especially in person, some good and interesting insights out of them. So I wanted to bring that to all the White Sox fans out there who may have missed it. But if you want to catch, again, full episode available on Foul Territory. They were at White Sox camp earlier this week. Hey, White Sox fans, enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win the Ultimate Opening Day Package. The winner and three guests will receive lower-level tickets to opening day, the opportunity for a pregame photo on the field, one custom White Sox jersey, and one $125 gift card to the team store. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. I am Jeff Miller. This is White Sox Weekly. Up next, we will visit with Jim Callis, and we will let you know about a very cool event taking place for the second annual time, but it will be a first for the White Sox. We'll do that right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on your home of the Chicago White Sox, ESPN 1000. And it is my pleasure right now to be joined by a man who, if you are a prospect hound, if you've been watching baseball for a while now, you are very familiar with his work going all the way back to the Baseball America days. Now you can obviously find all of his great work on MLB Pipeline. You see him frequently on MLB Network. I'm talking, of course, about Jim Callis. Jim, you can follow him on X at Jim Callis MLB. You can also find him on Blue Sky at Jim Callis. And he joins us today because we are getting set. We are in the midst of the second annual spring breakout by Major League Baseball. Unfortunately, the Sox were rained out last year when they were slated for their first one against the Cubs. They'll have their first crack at the spring breakout coming your way on Sunday when they take on the Colorado Rockies. And before I roll up my sleeves, Jim, and get into all the Sox prospects that we want to talk about here, I think I would be remiss if I didn't start with the fact that your very own Georgia Bulldog, Charlie Condon, does not look like he's going to have a chance to participate because of a wrist injury.
Yeah, that's disappointing. I saw that yesterday. Somebody on X reached out and was like, how are you holding up? I was broadcasting the Red Sox Rays game, and I didn't see that. But, yeah, poor Charlie had the thumb injury last year after he went number three overall, and now a wrist injury. So, unfortunately, Sox fans won't get a chance to see him when they watch spring breakout.
Well, do me a favor, Jim, because I think a lot of people are still just getting caught up on what exactly is spring breakout. You've obviously been integral in, like, teaching people about all the key young prospects across baseball. Do me a favor and kind of explain to our listeners what spring breakout is.
Yeah, it's funny. It actually came up. They had, like, a idea convention at MLB, and my boss Jason Ratliff at MLB Pipeline came up with the idea of playing these all prospect games. So essentially, yeah, as you mentioned, this is year two, and there's 8 games in Florida, 8 games in Arizona. Well, it'll be 7 because the Cubs got rained out again last night, although they were scheduled to play 2 this year, so they'll finally get a game in, I guess. But essentially, it's as many of the best prospects in each organization. There's 23, 27 of them rosters, and different organizations cooperate at different levels, and you have injuries. You have the Rays had some illnesses. It took a couple of their guys out of the game. But for the most part, teams send the majority of their best prospects to play in these kind of one-day showcases. And the interesting thing is, and I don't think it's actually going to happen next year, MLB would like to make this some sort of tournament. So I think, I don't know, maybe 5 years from now, we might be at a point where you see teams playing multiple games, and you might even see the Arizona champion playing the Florida champion, and the winner gets like a supplemental first-round pick as a reward. So I think they'd like to actually grow this event. But, you know, I not just because I work for MLB, I will say I think it's very hard to launch an event the first year, especially stuff like this where you're talking about so many players and logistics. And I thought last year it came off extremely well. You know, the only hitch was you had a couple games rained out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talking to players this year, you know, like for instance, the Red Sox and Rays played last night. And the Red Sox have 3 of the best prospects in baseball in Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell, Marcelo Meyer, all who are in big league camp and competing for big league jobs. And the Red Sox theoretically could have said, hey, we want you to focus on trying to make the team and you know, doing that. And they all wanted to play in this game. They were excited about getting a chance to play in this game. And talking to players, like last year, if there was interest in it, they didn't really know what it was. But after year one, players kind of are excited. All the games are televised on regional sports networks or MLB Network. I think MLB Network is doing 7 or 8 games live. and all of them are on all the streaming apps, you know, MLB TV, you know, I think we're streaming them on MLB.com, the MLB app, that app. Like, you can watch all the games live, blackout free. So if you love prospects, you get to see the vast majority. I think last count, 69 of the top 100 prospects in baseball are going to be in this. I guess with Condon out, that means we'll only have 31 of the first 35 picks in last year's draft will be in it. But, I mean, it's not just...
Only 31, Jim.
Guys, it's the best players.
Yeah, only 31. Listen, yeah, when you get that type of cooperation from the teams, that's a showcase. And I think baseball fans, especially if you're somebody who is into consuming spring training, I love that idea of trying to grow it into a potential tournament here, because you would only create more buzz. Honestly, you know, I think anybody who's been watching baseball for a long time, when you get to spring training, it really is all about the next generation players, because we never quite know what the veterans are working on. You know, you hear from pitchers, they're just, you know, they're throwing their fastball, they're trying, you know, they're working on a different pitch.
Right.
With the vets, you know, even if you're a huge fan and you're captivated, you know, like you and me, and you get into the spring training games, you still don't always know exactly what you're watching. But, you know, to have the next generation of potential superstars all squaring off in these games that could have a lot of meaning in the future, I hadn't heard that, but I you know, go ahead and pass along my vote to all the higher ups. I'm absolutely on board if they can make that happen, because it sounds pretty cool to potentially have something like that in place as a marquee event for spring training. This is White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Mellor, right now being joined by Jim Callis, who is going to be on a lot of the broadcasts for MLB Network as you watch all of these spring breakout games. Of course, here in Chicago, Jim, White Sox radio fans are very interested in what's going to go on Sunday when the Sox take on the Colorado Rockies. And that game will start at 3:05 Central Time. And, you know, one of the things when I saw the rosters announced was there was a lot of feedback. A lot of White Sox fans were like, boy, this team looks pretty loaded. Of course, talking about the White Sox. And that's something you would expect, and seeing as how they have six of the top 100 prospects in MLB pipeline. They've also probably got a couple guys who might be knocking on the door. So what do you think about what the White Sox roster initially is going to showcase here on Sunday?
Yeah, it's one of the best rosters you're going to see in the spring breakout games, because it's just my point of comparison. The Cubs have six top 100 prospects, but, you know, Matt Shaw's in Japan and Owen Casey's banged up. And a couple of their other guys aren't on the play. I guess the Cubs actually have seven.
Okay.
Only three of them are going to play in the game. The White Sox are going 6-for-6, and that's even with guys in big league camp. But you're going to see all six of these guys. Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith are the two best left-handed pitching prospects in baseball. Those guys are both going to pitch. You're going to see Kyle Teal and Edgar Caro, who are probably the best tandem of catching prospects in baseball, are both going to catch. You're going to see Brayden Montgomery and Colson Montgomery also in the game. And then I don't have their complete roster in front of me, but I think most of their best prospects after the top 10, I mean, after the six top 100 guys, are in the game too. Like the White Sox, you could tell, really emphasized getting, you know, they wanted their players to play in this game, and the players did too. So I think we're going to see almost all of the White Sox very best prospects in this game.
Yeah, as far as I know, that's everything I've seen indicates that pretty much, as you said, all their best prospects are going to be playing on Sunday. So for Sox fans, which it's been, you know, a rough couple of seasons here over the, this is something that I think a lot of White Sox fans are pretty excited about. So you mentioned Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith. I want to tackle both those guys because they are the two, at least for pretty much everywhere, the two highest regarded left-handed pitching prospects in all of baseball. How good can they be, and how quickly do you think they could be in the majors?
I mean, these are both potential, you know, front of the rotation type guys. I mean, that's the ceiling on these guys. It's all-star ceiling. I mean, I think Noah Schultz might have the best slider in the minors. Hagen Smith isn't far behind. Hagen probably has a little bit more explosive fastball. Noah's got a better changeup, throws more strikes. I mean, Noah's pretty amazing for how young he is, because it's, I want to say, he's probably 21. I don't know if he's turned 21 yet, but he's, for a guy who's that young and that big, usually they're trying to figure out their delivery. And, you know, everybody compares Noah Schultz to Randy Johnson because he's a 6'9", 6'10 lefty with a low arm slot. When Randy Johnson was his age, Randy Johnson was getting lit up at USC because he couldn't throw strikes.
Mm-hmm.
And Noah Schultz is, you know, Southern League Pitcher of the Year in Double A. I think
It's interesting. I mean, we know the White Sox aren't going to contend this year, so there's no need to rush these guys. I do think Noah Schultz is so good and has been so dominant. The last thing they really need to do is stretch him out. They've handled him carefully. I don't think he's ever gone more than four innings in pro game because they've like handled him with a lot of care. They'll stretch him out this year. And I think the plan would probably be, okay, we don't need to rush Noah. Let's get him 130 innings in AA, AAA. I don't even know if he'll go back to AA to start the year. But I think it might be a case where Noah Schultz is so good that he could blow through AAA and we could be, you know, around the All-Star break, the White Sox are saying, geez, we need to find some way to challenge this guy because AAA isn't doing it. So I think we could see Noah Schultz before the end of the year. I think Hagen, because he's barely pitched, he was just drafted last year and only pitched a couple innings in pro ball, probably realistically spends a year in AA, AAA, and we see Hagen Smith at some point next year. But both those guys, I mean, in terms of quality of stuff, they might force the issue because they're extremely, extremely good.
Jim, what did you think about the White Sox decision to draft Hagen Smith when Jack Caglione was still on the board? We've seen him put up some really impressive exit velocities here in spring training. I know some Sox fans who looked at the organizational depth, at least when it comes to hitters, were saying, man, how could you pass a bat like Jack Caglione? But, you know, the White Sox decision to build around pitching is clearly a priority. So what did you think when you saw them draft Hagen Smith over Jack Caglione?
You know, I didn't know what they were going to do because it's funny. When I was in White Sox camp about a week ago, I was talking to some of their guys about this. And it was funny because they were kind of torn. They had so many good options there, whether it was going to be Hagen Smith, who I just talked about, who set an NCAA record for strikeout rate. Like, nobody ever struck out more batters per nine innings than Hagen Smith did last year. And then you had Jack Caglione, who's probably the best power hitting prospect in the minor leagues right now, and also throwing J.J. Weatherholt. I thought there was a chance they might take J.J. Weatherholt out of West Virginia, who was the number one ranked prospect in the whole entire draft class, until he had a hamstring injury that kind of limited him at West Virginia. And he's off to a great start with the Cardinals. So I think it's a case where you couldn't go wrong. Like you could make a case for any of those guys. And you know, you could look at a glass half full, that they were going to get a really good player no matter who they took. Or you look at a glass half empty, like, man, they were passing up two pretty good guys when they took the other guy. I could see it either way. Like I said, I really like Caglione. You know, the one thing that worries me slightly about Caglione is he chases a ton. He had like a 40% chase rate at Florida, and he still made a lot of contact. But there aren't many guys with 40% chase rates who are, you know, like you might have power, but there'd be swing and miss when you get to the big league level. So I kind of want to see how that plays out. I mean, that was still, he chased a lot in A ball. He chased in the Florida, in the Arizona Fall League. So he's still very good, but he's not. It's not like a sure thing. Like there's some questions with him too.
Yeah.
So I get it. I was a little surprised just because I thought they might go hitter too. Maybe in my mind I thought they'd go Caglione or Westerholt over Hagen Smith. But flip side is, I mean, they've had a lot of luck and success developing left-handed pitchers.
Yeah.
Hagen Smith's stuff. I liked Hagen Smith more than I like Chase Burns, who was the pitcher out of Wake Forest, went number two to the Reds. I would take – it was close, and I think the industry would be pretty strongly tell you Chase Burns would have a slight edge over Hagen Smith, but I was Hagen Smith all the way. So I think they got the best pitcher in the draft last year.
Encouraging stuff to hear for White Sox fans. Here on White Sox Weekly, I'm Jeff Meller talking with Jim Callis of MLB Network right now here on ESPN 1000. Jim, it's funny because – you know, I've looked at all these prospect lists, and it seems like for me, at least I've paired up, they have six in the top 100 in most prospect rankings, including MLB Pipeline. But for me, it's funny how they all kind of pair off for the Sox, that is, because you've got the two left-handed pitchers, and then you've got the two catchers in Kyle Teal and Edgar Caro. And then, I mean, unrelated, but you've got two Montgomerys in Colson and Braden. So for Sox fans, it's kind of like three easy pairs to keep an eye on. What do you think about Kyle Teal and Edgar Caro, you know, having two top prospects who are both catchers, and also seeing Kyle Teal have quite a bit of success here in spring, including a home run off of Roki Sasaki a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, you know, like having two catchers is good because, you know, we're not in the days where, you know, a catcher would catch, you know, Carlton Fisk would catch 130, 140 games a year. And I think both these guys, Teal and Caro, are offensive-minded guys. And, you know, when you catch a lot, it wears you down physically. It wears down your bat. And I think, you know, if you wind up having
kind of a timeshare where these guys split catching duties for the most part, but then, you know, also, you know, maybe play 40 or 50 games at DH. So you have their bat in the lineup 130 times a year, and it's not all, you know, wear and tear of catching. They're similar. They're both offense over defense. Not that they're bad defenders. I think Caro probably projects is, you know, probably average-ish catcher. You know, Keel's a guy who, because he's athletic, has played other positions, hasn't caught as much as you think for a guy, you know, who played 3 years of college. And I think Keel can become a pretty solid catcher. So I think in the long run, I think they're probably comparable hitters. Keel maybe has a tick more power, and Keel's probably a better defender. But, you know, I think you're going to see, you know, and maybe, you know, Keel, you know, plays 10 or 15 games in the outfield to get his bat in the lineup, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road. But it'll be interesting because, like, the White Sox are in this weird spot where they're not going to contend, but they also don't have, like, a lot of, like, locks. Like, we're like, oh, that guy has to be in the lineup. So does Kyle Keel make the White Sox opening day roster, or do they send him to AAA? And if they send him to AAA, Edgar Caro's in AAA, too. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that.
Yeah.
I mean, we may see a preview of that timeshare at Charlotte to start the year. But they're both legit guys. And you know, Kyle Keel is going to be fun. I don't know if you've talked to him yet, Jeff. We had him on our MLB Pipeline podcast a couple weeks ago. And, he's going to be one of those guys who I think helps set the culture of, you know, the next White Sox team that's a contender. Like, he's got those catcher leadership skills. Like, he's a pretty smart guy. Went to UVA. It was funny. Before we had him on the podcast, I was doing some Red Sox stuff, and I was talking to one of their guys, and they're like, oh, I said, oh, we're going to have Kyle on our podcast today. And I'm like, oh, you got to ask him about his DJ skills. And he likes to DJ. Like, I think he's going to be running the music in the club. I mean, you know, maybe not when he first gets there, but, like, he, like, started DJing, like, I think when he was on Team USA, and they were over in the Netherlands or something, and he enjoys it. Like, so it's like, I think Kyle Keel, you know, and honestly, Brady Montgomery's a great guy, too, like, who they also got from the Red Sox.
Yes.
I think those guys are going to be culture setters for the next, you know, White Sox team that gets back in contention.
I love that anecdote, Jim, because, you know, it is, as a catcher, that's one of those underrated things that you can't always look at the stat lines or look at, you know, how he is as a framer. Like, there's a leadership element that if you've been around the game of baseball for any period of time, you recognize that it's unavoidable at the catcher position that your teammates are going to look to you in some ways as a leader, whether you like it or not, just by virtue of playing that position. So, yeah, and I agree with you. Kyle Keel has some of those, you know, qualities that you can see already at a very young age, which is interesting. And, you know, from what I've seen from Edgar Caro as well, he's somebody who, you know, I know he's working really hard. He's done a phenomenal job of already learning English as a second language.
Yep.
He's come, you know, a long way. So it's really encouraging to see that the White Sox have a couple of nice building blocks behind the plate. Jim Callis joining me for another couple minutes here on White Sox Weekly. All right, you mentioned Brayden Montgomery. So what can White Sox fans expect from him? I know he's probably a little bit, you know, a ways away when we can talk about all these other guys. What, though, is Brayden Montgomery potentially in the majors?
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, Jeff, because I do think, you know, he broke his ankle. He had a bad slide in the Super Regionals for Texas A&M, so he missed the College World Series where they went all the way to the finals. And I honestly think if he hadn't broken his ankle, I'm not saying they would have taken him, but he very much would have been in the White Sox mix also at five. And I think because of the angle and because they had some depth to the top of the draft, he fell all the way to the Red Sox at 12. He's 100% now. I talked to him in spring training. Like, he didn't debut because he was recovering from it last summer, but he's 100% ready to go, start of the season. And, you know, he's kind of your classic right field profile. Good athlete. He was a two-way player at Stanford before he transferred. Great arm, but a little bit wild, and he's such a good hitter, so he didn't really pitch a whole lot. A ton of power. I don't have the exact number for me, but I think he hit something like, I don't know, 72 home runs in three seasons of college baseball. Switch hitter, better from the left side, but ton of power. You know, fastball up to 96, so he's got that classic right field arm. He's athletic. I think they'll give him a chance. Like, he didn't play center field in college because there were other guys on the team who were a little quicker than him at Stanford and at A&M. But I think the White Sox will see what it looks like. He's got a chance to play center, and I think it's probably one of those guys who could be an average defender in center, solid defender with, like, that great arm in right field and a ton of power. And he's just got, like, that guy has so much charisma. I don't know if you've talked to him, but he's, like, again, I think they obviously were trying to get talent from the Red Sox in the Garrett Crochet trade, and they did. But I also don't think it was a coincidence that they got two guys with that kind of makeup who I just think are going to be a joy to deal with. Like, the Chicago media is going to love both those guys when they get to Chicago. And then he will take a more time than some of these other guys we've mentioned because he hasn't made his pro debut yet.
Yeah.
But I also think he's talented, Jeff. We could see him, again, and it depends what, how quickly the White Sox want to advance guys. If you told me he's in the big leagues late 26, early 27, I think that's pretty realistic. Because he's that talented.
Love to hear that. Jim Callis, one more thing, Jim. I've taken up a lot of your time here today, but I did, you know, I'll give you a couple or three guys here. You know, you don't have to give me a whole thing on all of them, but Grant Taylor, you know, he's hit triple digits at least so far this spring. You've got, and then you've got a couple of guys in Sean Burke and Shane Smith who are both vying for major league roster spots. Both of them could potentially round out the White Sox rotation. Thoughts on Taylor, Burke, and Shane Smith, the Rule 5 pick for the White Sox?
Yeah, you know, Taylor is going to be a guy that can really pop this year. Like, he was a second-round pick in 23. He missed the whole season. That was the year he was at LSU. They won the national championship. He missed the whole season because he had Tommy John surgery. But it's funny. Like, people will tell you that this has gotten out of hand. They're like, oh, he looked better than Paul Skeens and Paul Ball.
I will tell you that
is not true. People try to say that. That's my draft territory's LSU. People were already that fall saying Paul Skeens might be the best pitcher they'd ever seen. And they wanted to see it in game action. Grant Taylor did look spectacular. He's hit 102 this spring. He looked good in the fall league. He needs to figure out some secondary tests. He needs to figure out a pitch that's not hard. He's got a really good fastball. He's got a slider. He's got a cutter. But he needs to figure out whether it's curveballs to change pace or an actual changeup. And he needs to throw more strikes. But his stuff is really, really good. Like, if he stays healthy, and he was dominant when he pitched last year. He had a lat strain, so they kind of shut him down. But he's a potential top 100 prospect.
Tuesday, we have some actual regular season baseball games. The Los Angeles Dodgers will be taking on the Chicago Cubs as they kick off the Tokyo Series. And Roki Sasaki, who is the number one prospect, according to MLB Pipeline, he is going to start in that series. I believe he'll start game two after Yamamoto. So Roki Sasaki, what can baseball fans expect to see from him in his debut in Japan?
Yeah, now, I mean, he might have the best splitter I've ever seen, a lot of people have ever seen. I mean, that's his signature pitch. It's so hard and has so much drop. But, I mean, he's also a guy who can be mid to upper 90s. He's got a slider that can be a plus pitch at times. The scary thing with him is, like, I mean, he's a leading candidate to be Rookie of the Year, and I think he's going to be really good right away. I do think there are gains he can make with the consistency of the slider, with the command of the fastball. I don't think he's reached his full potential yet, and he's in an organization, the Dodgers, who really excel at helping guys reach their full potential. So I think it might be a case where he could be Rookie of the Year this year and get even better, you know, after a year or two. So I think he's going to be an immediate hit. I mean, he was certainly successful in Japan, and, you know, Kyle Teal took him deep, I think, in that backfields game. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll have a rematch of the 1959 World Series one day, and we'll get Sasaki facing Kyle Teal again. But no, he's really, really fun to watch because his stuff is, I mean, we saw it in the World Baseball Classic when he pitched there. I mean, people were kind of oohing and awing over his stuff, and there's a reason teams have been, you know, waiting to get their hands on this guy for a few years.
1959 World Series rematch. White Sox fans are already saying, sign us up. We will. We can definitely co-sign that. Jim, as always, great information. Appreciate it. We will be watching on MLB Network and reading on MLB Pipeline. As always, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
No, great talking to you, Jeff. Thanks.
Thanks again to Jim Callis for joining us here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. Hey, Sox fans, head to the ballpark on Saturday, March 29th, as the White Sox take on the Angels at 1:10 p.m. The first 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a 1907 replica jersey presented by Rush. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Coming up next, who is going to spring for the sake and sushi in Japan? I think we have a new front runner. I'll share that with you coming up right here on White Sox Weekly.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. As I mentioned, all right, sake and sushi. Who's buying in Japan as Major League Baseball's regular season will start with the Tokyo Series as the Dodgers take on the Cubs this week on Tuesday and Wednesday. Early baseball, 5 a.m. Central Time if you want to watch. I think it would be a nice gesture for Dave Roberts, who was actually born in Japan, the Dodgers manager, who just inked a 4-year extension with the Dodgers to pick up the tab for not just his players, but all the Cubs players who are out there as well, because he is now the highest paid manager in all of baseball. 4-year extension that runs through 2029 for a reported $8.1 million a year that just nudges past Craig Counsell, who was making $8 million a year as the previous highest paid manager in all of baseball. So there you go, Dave Roberts. Just a suggestion from me. I think the sake and sushi is on you for the Tokyo Series, again, that begins this Tuesday if you're into regular season baseball at 5 a.m. Also this week, we learned Gerrit Cole, Yankees ace, Cy Young Award winner, will be undergoing Tommy John surgery, so he's going to be lost for the season. The Rays reportedly are scrapping their plans on the building of a new stadium in St. Petersburg that they had agreed upon with the city due to the current financial structure of the situation and because of the fact that their stadium obviously was ripped apart due to a hurricane earlier this year. They will be playing in the Yankee spring training facility, but we shall see where they're playing in 2026, as that is currently up in the air. And then finally, word is that Vladimir Guerrero, who did not come to an agreement with the Blue Jays on a contract extension, was a reported $50 million apart, which when you're talking about a 14-year deal and what was, I guess, Vlad looking for $500 million, it seems like $50 million shouldn't have been the deal breaker. We'll see if the Blue Jays and Vlad are actually able to come to some sort of agreement. All right, when we come back, we will wrap things up and get you set for the next White Sox broadcast.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
White Sox fans, join us for Kids Opening Day on Sunday, March 30th, and kick off the 2025 season with a day full of fun. Enjoy an on-field pregame parade, face painters, balloon artists, poster design stations, southpaw appearances, and more. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. And as I mentioned, we're getting very close to opening day. I can't wait. Before you know it, it will be here. Home opener, March 27th. Against the Angels. So come on out and have a great day at the ballpark at Wright Field. We'll be out and about having a great time celebrating the start of the 125th season in White Sox history. I am Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Here every Saturday during the season. We'll be going to 2 hours as well, by the way, when the season begins. Want to say thanks again to Jim Callis, who you can see on MLB Network. You can read his stuff on MLB Pipeline. Had a lot of great information. If you missed it earlier, check it out on the ESPN Chicago app. Getting us set for the spring breakout game, which is taking place tomorrow. The White Sox and Rockies. Again, the showcase of all the great young talent in the White Sox system. We'll also have Sox and Rockies heard right here today on ESPN 1000. Len and DJ coming your way at 3 o'clock. So make sure that you keep it locked for White Sox baseball in just about an hour from now. This is ESPN 1000.